Now, your host, Michael Cohen, with the Capital City Recap on More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
And we are back. I'm Michael Cohen with producer Desi Simmons. What's the difference between being good and being great? It's been the topic of books like Outliers, with recent theories focusing on skill development through early exposure and repetition. But now, in a paper which appears in the research journal Current Directions in Psychological Science, MSU Associate Professor of Psychology Zach Hambrick says not enough credit is given to sheer intelligence. To discuss the topic, I'm joined by Professor Hambrick. Welcome to the program.
Thanks.
Now,
glad to be here.
Excellent. I'm glad to have you on. Now, let's begin by talking about this distinction of being great. Can you outline the general ideas of what greatness really is and how a person becomes a master in his or her field of interest?
Well, we tend to think of greatness in purely objective terms. So someone who is great is someone who consistently performs at a superior level on tasks from their domain. So a great chess player is someone who consistently chooses high-quality moves in a chess game and beats other skilled players. So we think of greatness from a scientific perspective, not in terms of subjective criteria like reputation or credentials, but in terms of consistently superior performance.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the question of what makes someone great, that's the big question for us. And there's no doubt that a long period of practice and preparation is required to become exceptional in a domain. And it's somewhere around 10 years, although there's debate about whether some people can reach exceptional levels of performance faster than others.
Mm-hmm.
But there's certainly no doubt that a very large amount of what we call deliberate practice is important. But we've asked the question of whether if two people engage in equal amounts of practice, will they reach the same level of performance? And some evidence from my lab and my colleague's lab suggests that the answer to that question is no.
Well, your assertion is that intelligence is not given enough credit in this
right.
idea of achieving greatness through repetition and time. Now, how much of a difference in intelligence are we talking about when it comes to seeing a real difference in the ability of one person to succeed in the same amount of time as compared to another?
Well, we have focused on a factor that's strongly correlated with general intelligence called working memory capacity. We think of that as sort of the core mechanism underlying general intelligence. And what we found is that in, for example, a study of music sight reading, practice accounted for nearly half of the performance differences across people. But this working memory factor, which is, we think, maybe a central component of general intelligence, added about 8% to the prediction. So
mm-hmm.
it's not as important as practice, but we think that in some domains, in some tasks, it could be what separates the best from the rest.
So what exactly is working memory capacity? How is it reflected then?
Working memory capacity is similar to short-term memory, and it reflects the ability to hold information relevant to a task in a highly active state over a fairly short period of time. So, for example, if you're playing music, it's notes in advance of the one that you're currently playing. So in music sight reading, highly skilled sight readers look ahead in the music that they're playing. And so that would be an example of task-relevant information in music sight reading. Or a more sort of everyday example would be you get a telephone number from someone and you have to hold it in mind over a short period of time until you can get it transferred into your own phone. And sometimes we have to do this under conditions of interference or distraction from the external environment.
You're essentially talking about focusing then.
Yes. In fact, we think of the ability to control attention and to use attention to hold information in mind as being highly related to working memory capacity.
Well, that doesn't bode well for our society, considering how distracted we are with our phones and practically everything else nowadays, then.
Well, that may be the case, and that's another interesting question, how technology has affected our skill at using our attention to accomplish tasks.
So it's not only time, but it's focus. You know, I'm familiar with this 10,000-hour rule, which I think you refer to as a 10-year period of focused effort at a particular skill. I wonder now, is the process of mastering something, is it a continuous process that develops within that time, or does it tend to have periods of sudden bursts of moving forward in your skill, followed by long plateaus of going nowhere?
Well, that's a really good question. For most tasks, what the scientific evidence suggests is it's a gradual process. So the idea that we reach plateaus and that we're not making any improvement is a bit of a myth. If we're engaging in this sort of deliberate practice, and we're engaging in these activities that are specifically designed to elevate our performance. Now, the rate of improvement will change across time. So usually what you see is initially a fairly fast improvement, so a steep rate of improvement, followed by more shallow improvement. But the process of skill acquisition for most task in most domains appears to be continuous.
I see. And as you get better, you see your improvement levels slide down. So you're getting just slightly better at that
right.
peak end. Now, is the understanding then that at some point you hit a maximum level of skill ability at whatever it is that you're pursuing?
That's right. That's exactly right. And in technical term for that is the asymptote. So the asymptote is the point at which more practice doesn't result in any further improvement. And what we think is that factors like working memory capacity might limit that upper level of improvement. So in something like piano sight reading, someone with a high working memory capacity is going to have a higher ultimate level of performance that they can reach.
I'm talking to Zach Hambrick. He's an associate professor of psychology at Michigan State University and just put out a new paper on this topic. Zach, how important is starting something at an early age as compared to adulthood? I mean, does someone who begins working on a skill at middle age really have a chance at greatness?
Well, For a couple of reasons, no. The first is if you start earlier, you have simply more time to get in a lot of practice. And then the second reason is that our brains are more plastic earlier in life than later in life. So neural pathways are just being established when we're children. And that sort of malleability, that sort of neural malleability seems to be important for acquiring certain skills, for example, a foreign language.
And so ultimately, your paper essentially states that that you do agree with the assertion that a lot of greatness involves repetition, but ultimately that if you discount intelligence, what you find is people that repeat a skill for a lifetime even may really never achieve that due to their lack of intelligence.
Well, that's I think that's right. So we certainly don't deny the importance of practice. It is the key ingredient for success in a wide range of domains: music, art, science, and so forth. But what we suggest is that basic capacities and abilities, like working memory capacity, which we think of as a central component of intelligence, are also important, and they may well limit the upper level of performance that a person can achieve.
Look, I can't help but ask you, is there any understanding of how a person can develop their working memory capacity and increase it?
Well, that's a fantastic question. In fact, that's the focus of research in my lab presently. So the goal is, or the question is, whether we can give people training in laboratory tasks that are designed to enhance particular cognitive processes, to see whether that can lead to improvements in working memory, and then by extension in general intelligence, and also in real-world functioning, so performance in the workplace. We haven't found the magic bullet yet, but we're looking.
Ultimately, from what you're saying, though, the less distraction you have around you, the more likely you are to increase that capacity, just in the sense that you're going to be able to focus more of your attention on one thing.
Well, that could be. So we would expect that people would benefit more from training if they're less distracted. That's a good point as well.
Well, that's certainly something to think about for those who are trying to develop any kind of a skill. That Zach Hambrick, Associate Professor of Psychology at Michigan State University, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.